Hello, and welcome to our podcast where we speak the truth about abuse. I am your host, Rochelle, and one of the things I am passionate about is meeting people and hearing their stories. This podcast puts survivors' own experiences in the forefront. Hopefully, this will bring a better understanding of the impact of domestic violence in our community. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. I am so happy to be sitting down with Cora today, and we're going to be talking about survivor-centered recovery. And I know a lot of folks are really curious about how this can look different or maybe work alongside with things like counseling and therapy and those kinds of tools for recovery. So we're going to expand on that today and talk about survivor-centered recovery. So Cora, I am so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here. Literally joyous to be here and at a point in my own recovery where I can share with others.
You know, I'm so excited that you're here, and I want to hear from you and talk a little bit about where you are now in your journey and what you're doing in your own work with this type of survivor-centered recovery and the practice that you do, not only for yourself, but where you are also working with other folks.
Yeah, really interesting, because where I am in my journey feels like the first time in my life, in my adult life, where I'm really living abuse free. And I'm really, you know, have been taking the time in my life to learn what abuse is and learn what healthy relationships are and learn about my own role in relationships and how I can be and stay healthy in relationships. And that is a huge place of recovery for me, because my entire life, I felt like all I knew was abuse and abusive relationships all around me. You know, a big part of my recovery has been my yoga practice. And I feel lucky enough to have developed a very gentle, long-term yoga practice that has kept me stable and explorative. And I am able to, I am a yoga teacher, so I definitely am offering trauma-informed yoga and other yoga-based holistic practices. I have really been studying the access or the meeting point of mental health and nutrition and, you know, some of our self-care. And so as a nutritionist, I am really helping people to kind of recover and find their best health through nutrition modalities like whole foods eating and other supportive practices that can help anybody be more balanced, but especially tender people who are dealing with chronic pain or chronic illness. When we are recovering from abuse, we often wake up to realize that we've had a huge health impact, a negative health impact from chronic stress. And from not having our needs being met from various ways. If we have experienced economic abuse or financial abuse, that would definitely impact our physical health, the food that we eat, what we have access to. So when we're looking at recovery and when I'm working with folks as a nutritionist, these are definitely things that we touch down on. And my own journey with recovery has inspired and fortified this work with others. So where I am in my recovery is able to help myself and help other people with all of the beautiful skills that I've been growing.
You know, Cora, I'm really glad you're bringing up the aspect that is often not talked about, and that is chronic pain and illness and symptoms that come from all types of abuse. And, you know, if you're comfortable talking about your experience, I'll just touch on mine. I, toward the end of my 20-year abusive marriage, the last 2 years, I had severe heartburn, and that's how it manifested in my life. And so when it came, when the heartburn came, I knew immediately that something was up. And at that point, I still didn't understand about, you know, domestic abusive and violent relationships. We've talked about it before, but, you know, I had the stereotypical idea that it was broken bones and black eyes and people in and out of the criminal justice system. And since that wasn't the case for me, I didn't attribute it to any of that. And I, like many survivors, I just was trying to hold it all together. And in doing that, it just manifested itself right in my body. And it was so hard. I remember I would carry a bottle of Tums with me everywhere, and I would have to take some before I ate. And of course, then that made it so I didn't want to eat because I knew what was going to happen. And it was just a horrible cycle. And the good thing is, after getting out of that, my healing my soul and my spirit and my mind, and then taking care of myself nutritionally, like you're probably going to talk about, my body was able to heal itself. And that's the beauty of it. But at the time it was so painful. And it wasn't until looking back after I got out that I attributed that and found out that, you know, like that book says, the body keeps the score. And that's what was happening.
It's so mysterious when you are experiencing, you know, this complex stress, and then your body is failing and you're like, why? And you don't necessarily, when you're immersed in that, have the faculties to be like, oh, I'm chronically stressed and experiencing relational abuse and my body doesn't like it. It's funny because it seems obvious from when you're in a stance of wellness now, many years later. And I'm really, thank you for sharing your story. It's really important to remember these things and to remember the journey that our body has been on. And chronic stress definitely has like a huge impact. And I myself, in my own relationship, experienced something very similar where my body was shutting down. I had irritable bowel syndrome and then muscle wasting, like where my body was just like losing weight and losing muscle no matter what I put in it. That doesn't even touch on the mental brain fog or the physical discomfort that I was experiencing with the low energy times, or how I endured being awake and afraid every night while raising children, the nightmares that lasted, the depletion of energy, and then recovery once I was physically out of that situation. The body definitely keeps the score, and all those reverberations of trauma and not knowing what safety felt like really took time for my body to align with good feeling and good experiences and good health, good energy. All of it holistically works together. And heartburn can be, you know, a sign that your body is just unwell, unbalanced, not having the right enzymes. And it's not like you can just put the right enzymes in and they would work. we're looking at foundational well-being. And if the relationship that you're living in adds to your well-being.
Yeah, foundational well-being. And, you know, so often I feel like that's overlooked. And I don't know if this was the case for you, but, you know, when I would seek some help from, you know, different people or different places, I feel like the focus was always put on things that they could see rather than that, like you say, that foundational piece that we need to get you, you know, away from abuse first before any of these other things, because otherwise, you know, it's just like, you know, putting out a fire, but another fire happens. It doesn't help for someone to give you a fire extinguisher if you have somebody in your house who's continually starting fires. And that's exactly what it was like. So no amount of advice for these other things that, you know, to take care of it was going to help until we address getting the person away who was starting the fires, until we stopped, you know, the fires from starting in the first place. So yeah. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. I mean, I love the analogy of somebody starting fires in the house and then we're trying to like scamper around putting it out. What if we didn't know they were fire? And this is often what domestic violence feels like and is experienced as. We are somehow in our society told that the fires and the fire starting is normal and to be expected. And we're not given a fire extinguisher. We're like sitting in the flames going, this must be normal. My heart is burning, but it must be normal because I don't know another way to be. I haven't seen healthy relationships. I don't see images of healthy people and healthy relationships in our media, in our society. When I talk about this burning heart, my relatives are like, just stay a little longer. It's a marriage. When I told my in-laws about what was happening, they literally said, but what does he do? And so they thought that his fire starting must be normal too, because they couldn't see it either. And that question really struck my heart. And many years later, I still find it elusive. What is domestic violence? What is this casual fire starting going on, like, in our lives? And it has taken a lot of self-inquiry and self-knowing for me to adjust to living abuse-free, to being able to educate myself about what is healthy in relationships. And I mean, educate myself by being in therapy, being in a support group, finding resources for myself, and listening to the stories of other survivors. That has been so pivotal for me, because through those stories, I hear the tools of resilience. I hear the signs of this casual fire starting. And I began to recognize my own self in my own story, which meant that I could advocate for myself in healthy relationships outside of abuse. And that is freedom, the freedom that we all deserve.
You know, for survivors, advocating for ourselves is such a huge piece. And when you talk about what's available in society for us to, what's available in society for us to see and to model after, I feel like that's definitely not there. There's more of a feeling of, at least in my experience, was, you know, you are weak or broken in some places, and sure, this isn't your fault, but we don't really trust you to figure it out going forward. So, you know, that could be something that, you know, the feeling that, you know, survivors are very fragile, the opinion that a lot of folks have that survivors shouldn't get together and talk to one another because, you know, they aren't strong enough themselves. And so they could, you know, cause further harm to each other. And, you know, in our group, we just haven't found that to be the case.
No, it's like the opposite. We are like each other's superpowered vitamins, spiritual vitamins, physical vitamins. And really, like, that is what the right support is knowing that you are not isolated in your suffering, knowing that you are not alone in your struggles, and knowing that we are here to celebrate your wins with you. The wins of self-advocating is huge. And for so many survivors, it's like we have practiced silencing ourselves for safety. When the windows open and we're cold, it may not be safe for us to feel cold. It may not be safe for us to say, hey, close the window. So for us to say, I got up and closed my own window, that's an immense victory. That connected our self-knowing, our sensations. I am cold. I can close the window. I can do it myself. That is victorious for a survivor to self-advocate. I love it.
And when you were talking about, like, that's our vitamin, like, and it brought me back to just the podcast I did last week with Jennifer. And she said, being with survivors is like her inoculation for not going back and accepting abuse in her life. And I was like, this is so good. What a fantastic way to look at the community of survivors that has, you know, helped so many, us included. You know, when you talked about self-advocating, the other piece that really resonated with me was when you said, I can feel the sensation that I am cold, and I can understand, I can see that it's the window is open and that's what's making me cold. And so I can go close it. That was huge when you were talking about that. And I know you have done so much self-advocating and recovery for yourself, because that really is survivor-centered recovery, is centering it on our experiences and our needs. And I had just had a conversation with another survivor asking me about my recovery. And of course, there was counseling involved and some advocacy that helped and community support. But I'm going to be honest, a lot of it was my own research and my own work and my own getting into what I needed for my recovery, what my family could use for our recovery, and then seeking out like-minded survivors who would be part of that. And it has been a lot of work, you know, because there's not a lot of resources out there right now who really understand the heart of the matter of what a survivor is going through.
It is so hard to understand the heart of the matter. Because like we said, like it's hard to see positive examples of healthy relationships. There's this image that came to my mind from the show Made on Netflix, which is about domestic violence recovery. And there's a scene where she's like in a shelter and they have like a free store and they're like, oh, honey, like, you often don't know what you like when you first get here. And like, that is so true. Because of the gaslighting, because of the psychological torture and oppression, like that we have experienced as survivors, we are told who we are. We are told how to be good. We are told not to feel our feelings, because that could actually change our circumstances. It's better if we just don't feel. Like I said, feeling that you're cold and that there's a breeze on your skin, that's a privilege that like you may not have had in your abusive situation, to be able to feel your sensations, to know what you like, to know what your favorite color is. You know, I experienced abuse as being told I couldn't work, being told how to dress, being told where to stand. Every part of my life was like curated by an external source who was telling me who I was and how I was best suited to be. And for me to be sensitive enough to practice the sensitivity and begin to heal those fractures, the fractures of me and myself, me and my knowing that what I like, what cold feels like, those practices are daily practices. Those practices are getting to know myself better, giving myself permission to feel cold, get a sweater, take a sweater off. Whatever it is, it's a different day. It's a different attunement. It's a different sensitivity. Just like the seasons change, our needs change. And I wouldn't want to put, the question of survivor-led practices. Like, I wouldn't want to impose my jacket on somebody else. They could be having a hot day and they don't need a jacket. They need to take their jacket off. So it's not my place to say, hey, put a jacket on. You're obviously this way. Like, a better question is, hey, what are you feeling right now? Can I help you with anything? I'm here for you. This is a survivor-led inquiry because it allows the survivor that moment to check in with how they feel. And do they need a jacket or to take a jacket off? Do they need a window open? It's not our job in any way to solve other people's problems or solve survival for anybody. Domestic violence is a systemic issue. The best thing that we can do is check in to see if we are in a healthy relationship and how we interact with others.
As we close today, I am going to ask you to lead us in an example when you were talking about that it's a daily practice for you. And I would like you to lead us today in something that we can do right here, right now, if we have the available energy and if we're comfortable, that we can do that and engage while we're listening to this podcast today.
Yes, thank you. And so I will lead us through a very simple breathing exercise. And this is one that I often offer children, kids yoga, very simple, very sensitive. And it'll be a breathing pattern, very simple. We'll breathe. The instructions will be to breathe in, to retain the breath, hold the breath in, and to breathe out. And it'll be a breath in for a count of 4 or 5 seconds, holding the breath for 4 or 5 seconds, and slowly breathing out for at least 6 to 8 seconds. And so that's the breath pattern that we are going to do for about a minute. And what I've heard and what I understand is that it takes about 3 breaths to reset the parasympathetic nervous system. So in a state of shock, or even in a state of brain fog, or in a state of recovery, or not knowing, or just wondering what's going on with yourself, like anytime that you can take a minute or two to breathe is a benefit to you. So as we get ready for this mindful breathing practice, there's different ways that you can give yourself biofeedback, physical information for your heart and body. You could put your hand on your heart, or your hand on your belly, and feel physically your body expanding and contracting as you breathe. The other option that I like to offer kids is to gather all the fingertips up, like a little tiny place to gather the thumb and fingertips all together. And that's the breath out. And then we, as we breathe in, we expand our fingers into an open palm and open hand phase. And then as we breathe out, we close our fingertips all together. So there's different ways that you can give yourself that physical information back to your body and brain. Often when we're survivors or experiencing stress and trauma, we don't even know what's going on with our body. So these little cues of putting your hand on your heart, putting your hand on your belly, or bringing your fingertips together can really bring your attention away from your heightened trauma and right back into your current state of being, into your body. And so we'll begin here with a little breathing. Today, I'm just going to put one hand on my heart and one hand on my belly. Let's just settle into the breath as it is. And then finding the breath all the way out, just natural without pushing. And here we go for the breath in. Holding the breath and breathing out. Repeat, breathing in for a count of five. Holding the breath in. Breathing all the way out, smooth and easy, nothing jagged. Let's do this one more time. Breathing in. Holding. And breathing out. And then next, let's just let the breath move in and out naturally. Breathing in. And out. And in, and out. One more time, breathe in. And then just sit for a moment. No need to control yourself. No need to do anything extra. Just observe and notice your body. Notice your state of being. Always a good opportunity to extend yourself compassion. Compassion that doesn't have to solve any problems. Compassion that doesn't have to do anything specific. Just compassion for how you are and taking this time to breathe and be right now. And there we have it. Simple, mindful breathing. That was about 2 minutes. Can happen anytime, anywhere. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Cora. That was so good. I appreciate you so much. I can already picture myself listening to this last part of the podcast several times. So that's just going to be beautiful to bring into my practice of recovery. So I appreciate you so much. And thank you for being here today. Wow. I just am so blessed. I'm so blessed to have you be part of our survivor community. And just having you here has been, you're such a treasure, and I know that people will be so blessed by listening to our conversation, by implementing some of these things into their lives, and by hopefully looking more at themselves and what they are wanting. And the same for us, right? It's a daily practice, like you said. It's not just a for them. It's for all of us. And thinking about, I love our analogies today, fires and sweaters and open windows, and it's fall and it seems so appropriate and so relatable. And I think this is just going to be a great message for all of us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I can't wait to see what's next.
Me too. I can't wait to see what's next. You are we're the fourth episode. It's been so special having conversations with my fellow survivors. And my hope is that we will just reach more people, whether survivors or people in our community, to just bring about better society, culture, and relationships for us all. So thanks again for being here, and we will see everyone in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.